This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 920, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. I'm Josh Flanagan, and I am here today with my special co-host pal, Jim Viscardi.
I'm back, baby.
I don't know if Connor works here anymore. He's was gone last week. I don't know. He might be back in June. I can't tell.
I mean, I feel like he's pulling a bit of a scam here, because I definitely spoke to him via text message this week. And so, just
It turns out it's a lot easier to tell people what to do than to do the thing. I don't know if you have some experience in management, I believe. Except the thing is, he's not the manager. This is iFanboy. Every week, one of us picks the book that they like the best from their stack of comics. We will call that the pick of the week. We will talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, listener mail. We have some good emails. I don't want us to get too overexcited and not get to them. So just warning you, that's still your problem, Josh.
I mean, it's just one of those things where I feel like anytime I'm on the show, we always end the show and you go, oh God, we went so long, they're going to kill me.
I don't know if you've noticed the real singular element there, but it's not you. I did the same thing to Ryan last week, and it's just like, I'm like, oh man, whenever you're on, it's like, no, Josh, whenever you're on, that's what it is. Jim, I didn't introduce you correctly. He's our pal. He's our guest host. Been around a long time, of comicbook.com.
That is the place where you can find me.
The preeminent pop culture headline factory on the internet.
That's right. Just churning them out.
It's an art I don't know.
Freshly baked.
There will be spoilers of the books. If anybody's been listening for a long time and they say, oh, Jim's on, and you're like, whoa, cool, and a Moon Knight book came out this week, I believe you're about to be either disappointed or delighted. You had the pick.
I did. And I'm going to be fair here. I did not pick Vengeance of Moon Knight number 3.
Of the Moon Knight.
Of the Moon Knight. Ranked high on the article. Ranked high on my list, but did not pick. Actually, I had to pick Dutch number 2 by Joe Casey, Simon Gain, I picked this book up randomly. There was a Zero issue that had come out, and I was like, oh, that's fun. And like the logo is an amalgamation of like all the, you know, original image books from the 90s. And this is like, what if Image had a superhero like Sentry that they just kind of forgot and found and put into the Image, you know, 90s superhero universe. And you get this book, and it's the kind of book that Joe Casey does so, so well. It's like, what if Cable and was also the Punisher, but also doing, you know, the Dark Knight Returns in the Image universe, basically, is what this
with
book feels like
of,
to me.
Like reference for Bronze Age Marvel at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just good, fun, solo superhero adventure with a ton of just killer action all the time and a grizzled old hero doing things that people don't like and making everyone around him wonder, what the heck is this guy doing? And this guy is like, why am I still doing this? And it just works, and it's gorgeous. And I am so nostalgic for that 90s superhero, like especially 90s Image stuff. I'm like, I am oddly right, you know, very nostalgic for, and this book just scratches that itch for me, even though, right, like there's no other Image heroes or whatever. And I think it's funny because on the flip side, there's another book that's all very similar, but also very different. I don't know if you're reading Local Man.
I've been told to many times.
Local Man is great. And that's another one that just kind of like takes place in the world of these Image heroes. And I'm just a sucker for it. And it's been really, really good. And there's only one issue left. It's going to end at issue 3, but it's really issue 4 because there was a 0 issue, because of course there was a 0 issue. and like I said, it really is just, but at the same time though, right? Like what I think Joe Casey does so well is like he writes superheroes in a way that like on the surface, it just feels like dumb superhero fun, but inevitably like you're getting a story, you're getting a real human story that makes you think, it makes you feel. I just love that. So like I said, like I will read anything Joe Casey does. And this book is, if you're not checking it out, you need to go check it out.
So what I think is interesting is that I can't quite put a finger on this. I know, and what I think what you said about Joe Casey is true.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you don't have to get another thing out of it though if you don't want to.
Sure.
And I mean that in a good way, meaning that like if you are looking for sort of this, it's not hard-boiled superheroes, but it's close. I would have a very tough time describing Joe Casey's work because it is it is very mainstream in a lot of ways, and he has no compunction with being mainstream in that way, except he's not quite. And it is this like it's an indescribable misalignment with regular comics. It loves them. It is not trying to stray from them. He's not really trying to reinvent anything. But it just has a slightly different take to it. And he can't help it. Like, I think this is, but I also feel like I read this as like, this is pretty straight up. Like it's, you know, one last adventure. I don't even want to be here. And I find myself looking for the hook. And again, I don't mean that in a bad way. Like I've got my eyes peeled to be like, what is going to be the thing here? And it might be that the thing is there is no thing. It's just the story that you're looking at. And that's what it is.
I think the thing that I like about this is that, like you can just, this just exists as a good, fun superhero story. And And that's all it has to be, right? Like, because I think, like, this is a guy who, you know, like, for me, my first introduction to Joe Casey was Wildcats 3.0. And
good one.
And, like, that book just blew my mind. Mm-hmm. And
Dustin Gwynn.
And then I went to go, like, check out Butcher Baker. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
What is this?
Like, even that really avant-garde stuff, though, is still very rooted in, you know, Steve Ditko, Stan Lee, and Jack Kirby. It is.
It is.
Because he loves that.
Right. And so, like I said, I love Joe Casey. I think he is one of the most underrated creators in our space.
That's because Ben 10 got toy money and he doesn't have to chase the dragon.
Right. I mean, good for him. Right. But yes. Like I said, this is a guy, like, read his creator owned stuff, read his work for hire stuff. It's all just as good. And like I said, like, the quality level for a Joe Casey book never dips. And so anytime he puts out something new, it's, you know, you're going to get quality, and Dutch is no different.
You know what I think? One thing about him that's interesting is he's very good at, because of when he sort of came up, this feels like a comic that has existed for a very long time.
Yep.
You don't need to, there's no big backstory or whatever. You sort of get it as you're going along. And to me, that always reminds me of, if you've been listening along for a long time, you've heard me say this, but, like, in the old days, you know, like, when I first picked up comics, you would just pick up a comic. Uh-huh. It could be whatever number, and you just started reading it. And he's good at that. Mm-hmm. Like, picking up a comic, especially, like, new, this doesn't seem like it's the beginning of a story. The whole time I'm like, is this some other series I didn't know about? And it's not. It's, I don't think it's completely whole cloth, but I don't know one way or another. It doesn't matter. But there's just something about that where he doesn't do too much. It's not too much. Right. He knows not to. And I like that.
I was at Marvel when he did Vengeance. And Vengeance, for all intents and purposes, was a book that probably should not have existed, but it did. And I think Joe tells the story or basically, like, he was just given it as a project with no real direction, and he made it a must read series in a way that gave us, you know, characters like America Chavez, like, just just doing it. It's just a phenomenal miniseries. And it's one of those things where, like, that book shouldn't exist, but it does, because Marvel had a gap in their in the publishing schedule, and like, he just, you know, he filled in the slot and freaking knocked it out of the park.
No, you're right. I was sorry. I was, like, looking it up, trying to sort of put it back in my head. And there's some article.
It was a book that was basically.
Yeah, I remember now.
They had Gabrielle Delotto covers, Gabrielle Delotto covers, and they said it needed to be about villains in some instance, and that was all he had to go on, and he just made it work, and, like, it's just wild. That's how good.
Six part miniseries. Yeah, first headline I saw. So it turns out that Marvel's 2011 miniseries Vengeance is pretty much the best thing ever. I was like, yeah, that's what he's saying right here.
Yeah.
And also, just because I want to make sure, Simon Gain, British artist, if you look through, he's worked on a lot of series that you would probably remember, or bits of it. Like, oh, right, this, the Vinyl Underground. He did some Northlanders issue. Great artist for this. In much the same way, is that it's sort of modern, and it's sort of cartoony, and it's sort of reminiscent of the time, but is also of the now. I like that sort of art that sort of straddles eras, and he's doing all those things really well, along with the colorist, Francesco Segala, who also colored the next book, unless I got it wrong.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah. And Russ Wooten, the letterer of all Image books.
That's
not
right.
Really, but many, many of them. Moving along, I was delighted and surprised, and I would like the listeners to know I had nothing to do with G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, number 305, being on this list. But I'm here for it, obviously. Because you are younger than me, as we've discussed many times.
Yeah.
And G.I. Joe will mean a different thing to you, or at least come in a different context.
I started reading G.I. Joe with
Devil's Due
when this series started. Like,
oh,
like when it was picked back up, I guess. No. Like when Skybound put out the first Larry Hama issue that they had him do.
Oh, jeez. Like,
yeah. Wow. I have read zero G.I. Joe until, but I was like, I was getting into the Energon universe stuff. I was all caught up in the, you know, all of that hype. And I was like, well, let me give this a shot. And I was like, wow, this is phenomenal. And then there's a guy at comic book, Jamie Lovett, who's been reading Larry Hama's G.I. Joe, you know, for forever. And he mentioned to me that he goes, honestly, Jim, this book should not work and it should not be as good as it is, you know, 30 years later, basically. Mm-hmm. And it is. And I love it. And it's like one of those things where like this is the perfect example of why. When good comics work and how they work is I picked up, I guess what it was issue 301, I guess.
Yeah.
I picked up issue 301. I loved it. I read issue 302. I loved it. And I said, you know what? I'm going to dive in. And I went
on, you're on board from there.
And like, I'm on board.
Like there's a lot of random elements going on, but again, you got, you know, Larry Hama's 70 plus, but he's been doing literally this book for 40 something years.
Yeah.
But he manages to do that thing I was just talking about with Joe Casey, is that you can pick up an issue, you don't have to know anything. And which is weird because it's pretty convoluted. There's a lot going on. but like the fact is, like, I wasn't reading this, and I read G.I. Joe for, you know, off and on for years. I'm very familiar with it or whatever, but I picked up really randomly issue 297, 298 from IDW just one week. It was light, and I was like, oh, I'll read this. I haven't. And I was like, that was awesome. I had no idea that the series was going to, air quote, end in two issues. But it didn't. And then it started up again. And I was like, I'm so happy. And then, you know, Chris Mooneyham, I mean, killing it. Just.
Yeah.
It's all, I don't know, man. He figured out the tone. And in one of those essays, you know, he didn't grow up with G.I. Joe. He didn't know any of this stuff, but he's not missing a beat. It's, if you can go back and read an issue of G.I. Joe from like 1986, and if it, I don't know if it's as wacky as this, but it's just like this. Like those issues, after it shakes off a little of the rust, once it figured out what it is, I mean, they're just good. They're good comics. There's, you can't go wrong. And it's weird that he's still good at it. Yeah. Like this idea has been driven, not literally, but almost as literally as you can, just driven into the ground and squoze every possible angle. And I'm still like, bring it on. Like in a way that I am not with most mainstream comics. Like I come and go on Amazing Spider-Man. I'm just like, all right, let's give it a little distance. But this, just, and it feels so much more energetic and imaginative than a book that has been written for 45 years should, by the same guy. Like he, you know, like, you know, we know a lot of people who are in their 40s and are over it. Like, you know, he's just, I don't know. Maybe he just can't not suck. Maybe that's, I mean, he's got
there's
mojo.
Also that, but I think it's also too, like, look, there's no one who knows these characters more or better than Larry Hama, and God bless him for it.
Yeah. And it's amazing that there's still, that he still gets the opportunity to. Now, the other side of it is, and he's been frank about this, is that, you know, I have to keep doing this. I don't you know, he came up working in comics in the 80s and 90s, which is no kind of retirement plan. That said, I hope he's not miserable, because I think he's doing great work, and it brings me joy. So, and you know, he's probably getting a pretty fair rate too. So,
yeah,
it's good stuff. I read X-Men Forever #1.
Did you understand it?
I had finished all of my books, and there was a slight chance that it was going to be the patron pick, and I went, all right, I'll read this. Should be noted, I don't always love Kieran Gillen's stuff. I like some of it, but when it gets into the X-Men stuff, I'm always completely lost. And such it was again. So what is this? Why are we talking?
So here's the thing. So I love Kieran writing the X-Men, and actually his Immortal X-Men has been one of the very few bright spots for me in the Krakoa era that I'm glad we're finally leaving behind.
Wait, are you saying that you didn't love the Krakoa era?
I loved the premise and the beginning of it, and then it completely went off the rails.
Okay.
There were some bright spots here and there, but nothing with a sense of like, I didn't read anything on an almost full ongoing basis, kind of after, like the second event they did in this era, the swords one. But I've always loved Kieran on the X-Men even before all this, right? Mm-hmm. I think Kieran writes very powerful superheroes very well. And that's basically what Immortal X-Men was. And to an extent, you get a bit of that here. The thing about this issue that totally blows my mind is I don't know why it came out this week. It should have come out like a week or two before.
There are some timing issues on all this.
Yeah, where like it's got a bunch of events that we kind of already know, and only really sets up, or only moves forward some of the Xavier plot forward. But I think it's one of those things where I just get sucked in anytime Kieran is writing Sinister and characters like that, where I'm just like, yep, okay, I'm here, I'm in for this ride and that. But like I did halfway through going like did I miss something here? Like, am I having deja vu? And then basically by the time I got to the end of it, I was like, oh, okay, well that's where we're at. But so I blame more, the scheduling, of this book than anything else.
So give me what you would say is your brief summary about what happened to these people who I don't know. I'll give you the context because I didn't read it. It was never made clear to me as I read books. Usually I pick up on things. I never understood Sinister at all. But recently I ended up, I wanted to know what the deal was with the guy from, who's the leader of Orcus?
Oh.
Dr. Stasis?
Yep, Stasis.
Okay, so I want to know who that was. And I was like, oh, he's a Sinister. And I started reading like the Sinister Wikipedia, and I was like, okay.
Right.
Okay. It's kind of makes sense. It gave me a slight understanding. So at a certain point in this book, I figured out, I was like, oh, this is a Sinister person. And then,
yes. Then so Sinister basically split himself up. Yeah. He's like split himself up into, as an effort for survival, basically, and to basically put himself into all of the camps, right? That are all just like starting to just kind of fall apart and war and fracture and all of that stuff. And then inevitably, in an effort where characters are thinking they are outsmarting Sinister, Sinister is feeling like, well, no, like Prime Sinister is, or Nathaniel Essex is like, I've outsmarted all of you, in a sense. And so it's a very like, aha kind of moment as all of these different groups are, they've called this, it's a very apropos Fall of X kind of thing. Like all of these groups are falling apart, and this book basically gives you a bit of insight into what's kind of going on around the world of X-Men, but then also at its core, kind of pushing the narrative, kind of pushing Xavier's plan mixed in with some more of the sinister stuff. Also, too, Xavier and like what they've done with Xavier, and like I miss, like I'd even take Xavier with his Cerebro helmet back at this point, but like bald, mm-hmm. bearded, walking, talking Xavier, I'm not into.
His beard's not even gray. He's not. He's just young and healthy. I mean, I guess they were like they were resurrecting everybody, and why should he be in a wheelchair in the world that you know he has access to? Fair enough, but
right,
you know, it's not the same. It's not the same character. Is he the same character? I don't even know.
I mean, presumably, but like that's my whole thing with the Krakoa era too. It's like I feel like they've turned a bunch of X-Men into plot points and whatever, and not necessarily. Mm-hmm. You have left a lot of the characters behind. I don't even want to get into what they've done to Beast. But
is he evil now?
He's like super evil.
Oh, that's terrible.
I mean, he's kind of been drifting that way even before the Krakoa era stuff, but like they went full blown into it. And like we already have an evil Beast. Like we've got Dark Beast. Like just let Dark Beast be the evil Beast.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the Age of Apocalypse Beast.
I mean, it's like a kill your darlings thing. Like maybe that makes you long for the other one. But
I mean, I guess maybe, but hopefully that's what we get when whatever this new X-Men line stuff is.
He really is one of those lovable characters, though, that you don't want to be.
Right.
You know, like you wouldn't want Nightcrawler to be evil. It wouldn't be okay.
Right.
It's not his heart. So Invincible Iron Man number 666, I noticed, because we put the real numbers on here. 666. This was the, not the culmination, but sort of like the beginning of the culmination of Tony versus Fei Long and all the Mark 72/73 armor and everything. Mm-hmm. And I think what was interesting about this is I realized, I was like, oh, they're doing the Death of Superman in here. Which may be a some sort of sign. I don't know. Every page is its own page. There's no panels. So this is like the climax of the thing.
Yeah, it's I don't. It's the thing. Here's the thing. I love when we get like I love all the giant like the new Sentinel Buster armor, and I love new armors, and I love all of that. But it feels that my only real like hesitation with the book right now is it feels like it's about to come to a screeching halt in a sense, or at least take a weird, divergent in that, like we're getting like, or it looks like we're getting a Tony stuck in his armor, story mm-hmm. before it officially finishes up. But I love Iron Man when we get big robot battles, basically, you know? Mm-hmm. But I also love, I didn't think I was going to like Tony's relationship with Emma, and it's really grown. It's really grown on me, and I'm really enjoying
that. That was the thing I was loving about the book, really. And I've been reading Iron Man for years now, pretty much unbroken. And it's a little like, he's out of money. He's lost his company.
Yeah.
And I was like, can we just make him like, yeah, tell the story, do whatever. But it's been like this for years. It's just like Thor. Like, I'm sad. I don't have my hammer, you know, whatever. Just like, okay, let him be Tony Stark again. But the thing is that Emma Tony thing was really compelling. And in that same way, like at first you're like, this is a terrible idea. Right. And then, you know, like Jerry Duggan won me over, won you over. I'm sure there's others. And so she's not in this part of the story. And I feel like I get it that this is his like confrontation with the big bad guy, mm-hmm. but it's her story too. And having her not here is crappy.
Yeah.
And also just a big fight between him and the other guy. Eh.
Well, I mean, you need that every once in a while.
No, you do, but like, And there's obviously like they're gonna bring him low. It's like, oh, I can't get through this.
Right.
Can I say something that really bothered me in this?
Sure.
And I didn't love this issue for all those reasons. At one point, like he flies out of the 73 and he's flying around in the 72. I'm just impressed I remember these numbers. And then he decides, oh, I gotta get back in the 73. Mm-hmm. And then like on the next page, he's inside it and he's manipulating it. He's apparently in some giant room, which is that ongoing question of like when we see Tony Stark like that,
right,
is he in like, where is he, because he's in armor. And then he said, and he doesn't have his helmet on, and he says, oh, and I took my helmet off. And I was like, why and when did you take your helmet off? You didn't need to do that. I get it. In a movie, they're actors. You can just be Iron Man in the Iron Man book. It's on the cover. I don't need to see his mustache. Yeah. And it was just this, like, it was this manufactured peril.
Sure.
That didn't need to be there. Yeah. And that sort of shot for years. I think Bendis was the first one to do it. Or maybe it was Warren Ellis, Armor Wars, whatever. Just that when he's in the armor, he's standing in a big glowy black room. Mm-hmm. Don't. Like, I don't need to see inside the armor. I get it. It was in the movies, but there's a reason why it was in the movies, and it just doesn't need to be in the books like right. this. And I find it confusing because then I have to, you know what? I'm taking it back a little bit because I was about to say, then I have to think about it. And then I was like, it's awesome that comics make you think about weird shit like that. I just don't like this part, this one, yeah. I guess. It throws me out of it. So that's totally subjective.
That's fair.
Yeah, but it feels like, oh, the book changed. Now we have to do this other thing. Also, I looked up Fei Long on something because I was trying to remember who he was because I was getting him mixed up with a Sinister too because he's pink.
Oh.
The other anyway, yeah. whatever. And like he's just got normal parents. I mean, like they're, but you know how the Marvel has the, they all do, but they have the ratings
yep.
next to their attributes. Well, Fei Long's thing is that his intelligence is a 6. And I was like, then what's he even doing here? You know,
Iron Man, Tony Stark only goes up against 8s at a minimum.
Minimum. This guy is holding his own, took over his company, apparently built better armor, and he's a 6? I think that's on an official site. I think.
You gotta get that
Marvelpedia.
Fixed.
Oh, I was, what? That's horrible. That's like, yeah, it's like Spider-Man's strength is a 3. It isn't. He's 8, maybe 7.
Right.
And if he's angry, if he's not angry, he needs to save somebody, yep. guilty, he's a 9.
Easy.
That's how it works. And now we come to The Vengeance of the Moon Knight from Jed MacKay and the delightfully pronounced Alessandro Cappuccio.
That's right.
What's going
look,
on?
Look, here's the thing. Actually, had this have been last issue, it would not have made the list. I actually have been a little down on the book. But this book or this issue really kind of picks it back up. And I think it's one of the things I think Jed MacKay does really well, and especially kind of in concert with Alessandro Cappuccio and Rochelle Rosenberg, the colorist, is when Jed needs to get all of his, you know, info dump stuff like out of the way, and then like kind of opens it up a little bit for some fun action. I think that's really when the book kind of sings, because I think the dialogue that Jed MacKay writes during action scenes is actually very good, and so then when you put it
yes.
You put it all together, that's what you know, in my opinion, makes for great comics. And I think the where I'd been getting bogged down a little bit is there was almost like too much story happening recently, and with all of the stuff going on where what is going on with Mark Spector and Moon Knight and all that jazz, and it's just like part of me was just like, okay, can we like speed it up a little bit? Can we get moving? Can we get moving? And this issue was, okay, we're moving. And I'm like, all right, I'm in.
So he's a vampire now?
Yes. In a sense.
Kind of remember that.
Yeah. I think this whole kind of twist has been very interesting. I don't know as if it necessarily needed to, like, I mean, I get it. I mean, they, you know, wanted to get another sales hit, and so they, you know, rebooted the series. But this felt like it could have been more of, almost more like I would have appreciated. I think I would have liked this more as if it were a bit more of a mini event than necessarily starting as a, you know, kicking it off as its own series. And I'm sure maybe as we get further along in this, it will all start to make sense. But this could have been in the regular, you know, it didn't need to have a new number one, but you know, it is what it is.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
Every chapter is going to get a new number one.
I do dig the, you know, the modified costumes and stuff like that. And so, but yeah, as like I said, I didn't want to say too much about it because I know I talk about Moon Knight all the time when I'm on here, but this is one of those, if you were like me and kind of just wondering when and where the story was going to pick up, this is where it picks up.
All right. It's with the art in this book is weird. There's certain pages where I'm like, wow, that's gorgeous. And then there's other pages where it's not really doing much. Like the ones where they're sort of standing around talking. Yeah,
that's what I say. Like,
weird. But then when they're in costume doing stuff, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. And then it's some, like and it's sometimes they're like I said, especially in like the last issue, there's too much of the standing around talking. Which just like,
which, you know, it's one of those things, like it's a rule you can break if you're really good at it. But you aren't always. Superman number 855 by Joshua Williamson with art by David Baldeon and Norm Rapmond. You put this on
I
here.
I did.
For some reason, I'm surprised that the Superman book.
Yeah, I don't really read Superman.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at.
And so, but I love Josh Williamson, and so I wanted to when I realized that Superman was more the superhero book, I decided to give it a shot, and I've really liked it. And like this is, you know, it's the end of an arc, and I mean, man, Josh Williamson made me a Superman fan in a sense out of this, and more so, he made me a Lex Luthor fan throughout this.
I think Lex Luthor is the most malleable villain,
yes,
in that he can be anything, yep, and he works really well in that way. He, because you never quite, it's not like he's converted,
right?
You know, and you're like, oh, he's a good guy now, but you get this sense like, ah, he wants to be, but he's, you know, he's a narcissist.
Sure, he only cares about himself and survival and glory and all that. But like, when he's forced to, I think it, like he works when he's forced to do something that, you know he doesn't really want to do but has to do. That's when I think he's fun.
There's a big retcon here, is that they basically said when Luther got to Metropolis, he was trying to be a superhero. First thing. That's new, I think.
I mean,
if Connor was here, he would tell me.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I love that he's really been married to green and purple all along. And why? Like, you know those are the Joker's colors, right? Right. There's one bit in here that I did not like. And there's a bit where they're at Supercorp.
Uh-huh.
And Clark is playing super CEO, and Lois like breaks in, and he rolls his eyes at her. He says, "We'll talk later, Ms. Lane," and he's rolling his eyes, and I was like, never in a million years does he roll his eyes at Lois Lane in front of other people,
right,
in his dumb coat. Yeah, I'm not like, I get the idea. I think they're having a ton of fun with the designs. I hate all of them.
Yeah,
but,
that's fair.
But I don't hate that they exist.
Right.
If that makes sense. Like, I'm like, ugh, it's all horrible, but I get it. I accept that. There's that one page with Parasite, which I think is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I've been a good Superman. I want to help. And he's like, you are, Rudy. And I really actually really love the art in this.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's
super exciting. I do not like the model of Superman in some of the pages. He looks too much like John. He looks too young. But other than that, like sort of the storytelling and the figure and the dynamic action and the everything, I was like, oh, this is really great. This is beautiful. I was up and down on it, but ultimately it's fun Superman books. So it should be wacky, and it is. It's fun. Wonder Woman number 807 or 7 from Tom King. And Guillaume March, who is not the normal artist on this, but is a delightful guest to come on. This was one of those cute timeout stories where Wonder Woman and Superman go to the Intergalactic Mall, which is like the Mall of America, but in space, the Andromeda Mall. And they're trying to find a gift for the birthday of the man who has everything and wants nothing, Bruce Wayne. And they have a nice day out at the mall together. And it's a sweet little story. And it's one of those things where you get to see, you know, Superman and Wonder Woman, where they don't have to worry about anything and they can just be comfortable with each other. And it's one of those, no one can know what they know. You know, no one else understands each other like they do, much like two old comic book podcasters. Like, we get it. Yep. It's okay. We understand. You can relax here. This included the world's worst pun ever, where Superman said, "What if we just get him a soda and we drink all the liquid out of it? And then you give him the thing Batman loves most, just ice," which I took directly to Tom King. I said, "Tom," and he had no excuse. I did. I said to the pal, I said, "Tom," and he's like, "Listen, man, you know what? It's not okay. It's not." It was clever in how terrible it was.
Sure.
I was like, the mind that thinks it up, you have to be impressed with. But you don't have to tell anyone about it. It's the thing about a pun is that you think of it and you're like, God, that really is very clever. And I want to let people know that I thought of it, but you shouldn't. It's just terrible. That was good. The Nacellaverse, yeah. Number zero. Now, what I learned about this, I did not read it. You will talk about it.
Yep.
Is that this is a thing that exists.
Yes.
I did not know there was another verse.
Yeah. Well, it's new. So the Nacelle Company is a company fronted by Brian Volkweiss, who is of The Toys That Made Us, Movies That Made Us, a bunch of other specials and stuff that you can find on various channels and streaming services and things like that, is a lifelong toy collector. And a couple years ago started picking up a bunch of old toy licenses, including Sectors and RoboForce and Garlo and Power Lords. And it wasn't until they picked up Biker Mice from Mars that I was like, oh, because I love Biker Mice from Mars. And that was really what made me like kind of pick this up. And I knew of RoboForce. I liked RoboForce for the exact reasons why I liked Iron Man this week. I just like big robots doing things, right? And so this book is a bit of a mixed bag. So basically what they're, so this is part of a very bigger, more ambitious plan where they're doing a bunch of cartoons for all of these. Ryan Reynolds is producing as a producing partner on Biker Mice from Mars. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, I believe, is his company is coming in for RoboForce. So there's a lot of like very, a lot of attention like kind of around this. And this book is supposed to kind of be the starting point and then bridge for all of the stuff that they have coming out, which sounds totally crazy, totally ambitious. Who are these characters? What are they kind of thing for literally anyone picking these up outside of the people who know maybe what some of these licenses are? Like for me was Biker Mice. And somehow it works.
For you.
For me. It works for me. Garlo is kind of the main, you know, kind of the needle threading this all together. You know, like I said, I don't think there is anything that will ever get me interested in Sectors at all.
Sectors is the only one I knew. I had some. And I mean, like, I don't think about it for like the like Sect. I don't know if people remember this. You probably won't because you were Zygote. They were like action figures. They were Thundercats knockoffs, right. And they came on like their mounts were giant bugs, and the each of the bottom of them was a glove, and you stuck your hand in the glove, and therefore you then became the legs of the bug. Because they were either furry or smooth or whatever, and then they like sat on top of them. And I hate bugs, but I had two of those because it was a neat mechanism. And I don't even know if there was a show. I don't understand like how a guy goes from being a big toy collector to like, did he make a lot of money off toys? And did he then produce the toys that made us, or is he just like a featured
player? He produced it. He is the mind behind the toys that made us.
Huh.
Yep. And also he's like, and like he is also early in Brian Volquist's career, and I think he still does this, he produces a lot of comedy specials as well, and has worked with a bunch of really big name comedians and stuff like that. And he's produced some of the like Disney artifact shows that are on Disney Plus.
Okay.
That are, you know, like, oh.
So he knows how to get things done.
Yeah. And so, and he's a super great, like super great guy, super enthusiastic. And like, again, for me, right? Like, you know, I came for the biker mice and the biker mice delivered. And I look forward to Oni putting out a new biker mice book because I'm that kind of sucker for nostalgia.
What happened to Oni? I don't even recognize Oni anymore. They should change the name.
Well, I think, because... I think that's what they're going through now, right? Like Hunter Goranson, I worked with at Marvel, and he's, you know, publisher over there now. And, you know, I think he hasn't been there long, but.
I mean, listen, what they used to do that I loved, I don't know that there is a market for. I think First Second is probably pretty much, you know, taking that up. Yeah. The Scott Pilgrim days are over, but I don't know what it is anymore.
Yeah.
In that it's other than just like, it's so different than what I expected. And I keep going, well, maybe this is a book, and it's not.
Yeah.
And it's not even a comment on the quality of the things. It's just, it's so different. And you know, Image is different than it was 10 years ago, 10 years before that, but
different than it was 5 years ago.
Crazy. So. Those are the books that we wanted to talk about. But each week the patrons get to vote on a book, and this week that book is Man's Best Number One from
Boom.
Pornsack Pishishote, I think, maybe, who did some really interesting books. The Good Asian, he used to be an editor at, God, I think it was Vertigo, and then it was DC after there was no Vertigo. Yep. Jess Lonergan, an art, amazing artist. He did some sort of... I don't know, was it one shot or something a year or two ago? Blew my mind, and I've been following on Instagram, and just beautiful art. Letters by Jeff Powell. I would describe this as there's a lot of pet books going on right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who love pets, and they love We Three from Vertigo, and they're taking their swing at it.
Yep.
And this is another one of them.
Yep. Homeward Bound in Space.
Yes, that's kind of... Yeah, that's kind of it. So you've got, you know, the alien, not aliens, you got the pets, and they have robot armor, and they're training to fight Clangers, which are big evil robots. But then some of that takes place in VR, I guess. It's a weird setup. It's a very strange, and like after that, it kind of stops making sense to me. I guess they're on a spaceship that's trying to find a planet.
Yeah.
And then it crashes, and they're the ones left, and they got to go be good dogs so they can get back to their master, I guess, who crashed in the ship, but then other people kidnap them. A lot happens, but I'm not clear on what most of it is.
The thing that I think is selling me the most on this book is the art on it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed just... going through my first read, but then like flipping back to like just look at certain pages and panels more and more. That's probably what's going to get me to issue two. And then I'll probably go from there. But again, I'm in the kind of the same boat where it's just like, you know, it feels like there's a lot going on here. I think I need a little bit more information on like just really the core direction and what this book is for me to stick around. But
I think one of the things is when you have cute animals, the instinct is to sort of be like, that's enough.
Right.
But what we have here is a cat, a dog, and a cat. Two dogs and a cat. And they have personalities. There's the one dog who's been in every fucking story with pet, with anthropomorphic pets, is like, we got to do the right thing for our master because I'm a good dog. Then there's a cat who I don't really know the cat's personality, but it's usually a little bit. And then there's another dog who's kind of a dick. And he has a big rocket on his back, which is awesome. And I don't think that they're named after the Porthos, Athos, and the Three Musketeers.
I didn't know that.
I didn't spend enough time with any of the characters to know who they are or why I give a shit. There's a lady who's like their trainer, and she seems to be in love with the jerky guy in an eye patch who hates the animals, which is weird. I don't feel like I was introduced to the characters very much to give enough of a shit about them at all. And as such, because the pet characters are really very little cookie cutter.
I've read a lot of books like exactly this what you would expect them to be.
Yes, and you know, if you're doing Homeward Bound, I guess that makes sense. It's fine, but I've read a lot of books like this recently. Yeah. I feel like, you know, that Tom King is doing. I forget what it's called, but Zip Boom also, the dog pound one or the pet shelter. I forget what it's called. You know, and they have those kind of animals. You know, I've seen The Secret Life of Pets 1 and 2. there's not a lot here that wasn't in Wii 3, and Wii 3 was fucking amazing. I haven't even seen it. I couldn't tell you what it was, but I know it made me cry, and it was 3 issues. You know, it's a tough thing to go after in terms of a genre. And I don't know what this is bringing to it that hasn't been brought.
Yeah, I think I said it right. I just wish this was a little bit more straightforward. And that just like you said, the pets are exactly what you would expect. Honestly, sometimes that can be enough, but I don't, I don't know what the stakes really are yet. And I feel like I should at least know what the stakes are, in a sense.
I would boil that to I don't know why I'm supposed to care yet. There wasn't anything in here that made me care. None of the relationships. The closest thing that was interesting is the one dog who has an awesome jetpack on his back, which helps. not a jetpack, like a rocket. Yeah. He's got a big-ass rocket, and he's impetuous, and he's got, you know, he's got an inferiority complex. That's it. And that's not a lot to go on. I'm going to say a phrase to you that I'm thinking about.
Oh boy.
Jess Lonergan is like a minimalist James Stokoe.
Oh yeah.
There's something here that's like that. There's these sort of thin lines that the panels, the way that he does panels and the sort of squares within squares and he does, you know, the way that he controls the dynamics in the sizes and placement of the panels is so interesting and so good. It's the kind of work that you don't see very often in mainstream comics because people don't have to, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like there's a way that's tricky because you don't want to try to be too inventive. But it works really well in here. And as I look through, it seems very deliberate. And he's controlling how things feel by cramming panels together or letting them breathe, which is not like a new
thing.
But the way that he's doing it feels new and skilled and is really interesting.
Yeah, the
character models are beautiful.
That's what's getting me to issue 2.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very fair. And if there was going to be anything, and the spoiler, I don't know that I'm decided on that.
Yeah.
It will be that, but I instantly perked up at that name because I remembered, you know, like there's a lot of artists that come through, but every once in a while, what was that book from Image? I forget. But I was like, who is this person? And I instantly like found as much art as I could on them. And there's just not a lot of comics out there that Jesse Lonergan has done. So he's somebody to watch out for. Okay, it's ratings.
Okay.
Ratings. 3.
This is out of 5, right?
Yes.
Yeah, 3 is fine. I think 3 is fair.
I think 3 is generous. It's weighted on one side or the other. It's too ambitious by half. and it's from a story perspective, and there's a lot of heavy lifting in the art.
I will do one more.
I will look at the next one.
I mean, that's fair.
And I'll, you know, if I'm looking through it and something grabs me about it, I'll you know, move that into a reading, but I'm going to look at the next one. I did that for a long time with Greg Smallwood. I was like, it was a Moonlight book. I was like, yeah. I don't really like this book. I'm going to look at it every week. Every time it comes out, that's going to be a thing. So that was the patron pick. Thank you to all the patrons who do that. If you are interested in voting on a book for us to read, to force us to read, but also just help support the show, you can go to patreon.com/ifanboy. You can directly support the show. You unlock shows. You already did that, really. There's a great community that is formed around the patrons on both Discord and on Facebook. There is a monthly patron hangout, which my son is apparently a big fan of, which is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And then he found out that the rest of the shows that I do aren't on video, and he's completely uninterested in that because of YouTube. There is now a yearly membership. It is 10% off of the whole year if you want to choose that. People have opted for that, which is so cool. What a flattering commitment to have made in that way. So thank you for the folks who've done in any way. There's tier exclusive merch. At $5 or higher, you will get a patron power, and you'll have access to the Discord server. At $10 or higher, you get an ad-free feed of this show. You can find out more at patreon.com/ifanboy. ifanboy.threadless.com is a merch store. There are 13 designs on t-shirts and more like that, all sorts of stuff. ifanboy.com/support has a PayPal link. You know what to do with that. ifanboy.com/Amazon. is the way that you can, if you buy stuff on Amazon, then we get a little piece of that. It's an affiliate link. It doesn't cost you anything. Nice and easy. You were going to get some weird cheap Chinese shelves for the bathroom. And they're going to break because they're made of particle board and it's in a wet environment. But I mean, at $8, who can complain? There will be links to buy the books on Booksplode. And of course, there's bookshop.org, which aggregates local bookstores for you to order books online. And that way you'll find those links where appropriate. And like we said, every week, patron at the $5 or higher level gets a dumb superpower. It still says dumb. I don't like that. We bestow them with powers and abilities beyond those of normal mortal humans. And Joseph Israel is your burden to bear this
week. I've thought about this one.
Okay. How long?
Not a terrible amount. Probably the last five.
It's okay. You don't have to try to inflate your how long you've been thinking about numbers just because we're here.
Like 3 minutes.
But, okay. Fair enough.
Joseph.
I thought about it much less.
Joseph will never, ever have to worry about a can of soda exploding on him, ever. Let's say you were carrying 12 pack of your soda of choice into your house and you drop them and you're really looking forward to cracking one open and drinking it. And you're like, oh my God, I'm gonna have to wait like 2 or 3 minutes for it all to settle for me to open this thing again. No, not for Joseph.
First of all, 2 or 3 minutes is not long enough if you're talking about a high fall for a can.
He just puts his hand on the can, and that can will open with such ease. No explosion, no nothing, just that. But that clean, crisp.
Okay, that slight mist.
That slight mist.
I can tell that I'm talking to a soda drinker right here. Because you put me in a sense memory. Like, I don't smoke, but I think this might be just as bad. But what you just said was just like, oh, yes.
Yep.
I heard it and I felt it. And what I thought was, does he make it flat? And you said, no, that's not what he brings. He brings it back to the proper level. He reabsorbs those carbon dioxide molecules to the correct level.
That's it.
Huh. Does it work with any kind of carbonated beverage, or is it only soda?
Any kind of carbonated beverage. If it is in a can, if it's a 2-liter bottle that got kicked.
Okay. So any sealed container.
Joseph's.
Is there any sort of recarbonation issue?
No. He can only.
Okay.
He can only decarbonate.
Okay. He cannot raise
the dead.
Because that carbon dioxide is still in the can. He's just replacing it to have been part of the liquid solution.
Yep.
As opposed to struggling to get out. You can tell that my grasp on the science of it is very tenuous, but I'm trying to act like I know. I don't think I'm wrong, but I very well could be. All right. I like that. That put me in a time and place too. See? Like you.
There you go.
Yeah. You put me somewhere. And you know that Joseph is, it's almost like a sure bet that he's like, I hate soda. he's a tea guy. He's an iced tea guy. Ugh. It's just water that's slightly brown. Okay. So like I said earlier, there's some emails here and I think they'll be fun to do. Jordan from Alabama says, I was listening to the latest Pick of the Week podcast and y'all's conversation about J. Michael Straczynski on Captain America got me thinking. And just so you know, when I read this, it didn't go where I thought it was going to go after this. And I'm thankful for that. I myself have never been a huge fan of J. Michael Straczynski comics. The only notable exception to this was his very brief Thor run from 2007. They're all brief because he always quits before they're over, Jordan. I'm stopping. No, I'm not going to keep going. Are there any creators, either artist or writer, that you traditionally dislike but have had a series run or issue that you did like? And if so, why? I think this is a wonderful
question. Oh, that's interesting.
It is. This is a starter. And I know that it'll speak to you in a certain way because you are a huge fan of Dan Slott's run on Amazing Spider-Man.
Am I a huge fan?
I thought you were. Am I wrong?
I don't like Clockwork. I have only ever been into every other arc Dan has written on Spider-Man.
Oh, maybe that's what it was. Either way, I was so not into Dan Slott on anything. Really, it wasn't that I didn't like it. It just didn't do it. Like I remember there was Fantastic Four, there was Amazing Spider-Man, there was Iron Man. But that fantastic, wait, I'm sorry, I meant to say Amazing Spider-Man, and there was another one, it was a Silver, whatever, the Fantastic Four run that he had just before this this stellar Ryan North run, I loved every single bit of it. I couldn't get, I don't know what changed from sort of the guy who I wasn't for, but when in that context, man, I couldn't get enough of that series every issue. It's the first thing I thought of.
I have a probably a fairly controversial one.
Ooh, I like this.
Grant Morrison.
Okay.
And the thing I did like.
Oh man,
Final Crisis.
That's not controversial. It's baffling.
To be fair, I did love All-Star Superman, but I didn't read that until after.
And here I am talking about We Three like it's some sort of sacred text.
No, and look, I think the problem is I got into Grant Morrison late, I think. And or you know what? I got into Grant Morrison when he was writing Batman. And
that was rough.
That made absolutely no sense to me. And then I tried something else thinking maybe it's me. Then I tried something else and I was like, I don't get this. But then Final Crisis was happening and I had just really gotten into comics and it was probably the first DC event that was happening as I just got in. And I read it and I was like, wow, this is great. This is like, it was one of those, it's the same feeling I get when I read Jonathan Hickman books sometimes where like, I don't truly understand what's going on, but I have enough of a grasp of what's going on that I'm like, oh, I'm interested. And then I read All-Star Superman and then I read We Three and I was like, oh, these are the books that now I understand.
Yeah.
But for a while,
have you ever read Animal Man?
No, I have not read Animal Man and everyone keeps telling me to read Animal Man, but that feels like something that I don't know if I care enough about Animal Man.
You don't have to. I mean like I know, it's one of those that's real good.
Yeah.
It, like and not in the like this is you know I mean the thing about Grant Morrison is always been Conor Ivers is it that he swings for the fences every time.
Right.
Every single thing is a full-on haul and you're either going to like it or not and he's either going to succeed or fail and he's failed. I mean, it's subjective. Some people love or whatever,
sure.
But some things don't work out. But like, you just gotta appreciate the hustle of it. You know, it's just like, I'm gonna throw everything at this, and it may or may not come out at the end, and that's just how he rolls. You know, it's like a Top Chef episode. Like, mm-hmm. just go for it. That's a good answer. I like that. And then I'd say that if I really wanted to zoom in on exactly what the question is, the first Paul Jenkins thing that I ever read was Inhumans, which was a miniseries that came out of the relaunch of the launch of Marvel Knights. It was one of the series along with Kevin Smith's Daredevil and a very forgettable Punisher and a Black Panther or whatever. And Inhumans, drawn by Jay Lee, remains one of my favorite miniseries. Not necessarily because it's one of the best things I've ever read, but it's one of the first things I ever read with those characters that opened my eyes to be like, oh, wow, this is great. And it was very early in my sort of like reading comics as a mm-hmm. young adult kind of thing, and where I was trying to sort of understand the form and everything. And I just loved it. And I've said since then that they're some of my favorite characters. I couldn't tell you another Inhuman story that was worth a damn since
yep.
then.
Yep.
But that
it's
was
like, it's legitimately the only one.
Kind of, yeah. Like
the Kirby stuff.
Right. But like, and so based on that, I said, well, I got to follow this Paul Jenkins guy, which has proved to be a huge mistake for me. And I've liked almost nothing he's ever done. And people got to remember.
You didn't like the original Sentry stuff?
That's the next thing that him and Jay Lee did was the Sentry. Yeah.
Right.
No.
Oh, I loved it.
Oh, no.
I loved it.
Man, I followed that guy around for 5 years. And at one point I was like, I think I hate everything he's done. he's some great issues of Hellblazer. I will say that. But like since yeah. then, no, the Sentry, like, and it was a huge, like at the time it was hugely hyped.
Right.
And it was like going to be a really big deal. And so it's one of those things that you go in, and I was all in. Like you go in and you're like, I'm so into this, and we're going to see, and this is going to be great. And you're reading it, and like, it takes a little while. Like the first time I saw The Phantom Menace, I'm like, oh, I don't think this is good. Like it didn't occur to me that it wasn't going to be good.
Right.
And then it just got worse and worse. And now the Sentry is hilarious. yeah, that's my, like, it's sort of backwards. Like I love the first thing and then never again. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are others. This is an awesome question. For sure. You want to read the next one and we'll
sure.
finish it up.
This one is from Jason, Parts Unknown. I've been thinking about this for a month or two now. A couple of months ago, I read 4 or 5 comics and I thought to myself, boy, those were great. And then the following week, I read 7 or 8 and thought, oh man, those are terrible. When I was trying to dissect what made one week over good over the other, I realized that it wasn't the comics themselves, but that I was in a good mood reading one week over the other. The week they were good, I was reading them as part of winding down at night, and the week they weren't good, I was reading them earlier in the evening while our home was still buzzing with activity. Since this obvious discovery, I now won't read my comics each week until I'm in the wind down phase of the night. It won't make a bad comic better, but it has made me enjoy what I'm reading a bit more. This is a long-winded way of me asking, what mood do you try to create for yourself when you're reading your comics for the week? That's a good question.
Now, yeah, I know that my situation is unique in that every week there is a sort of a forced march to get a bunch of books read within a given amount of time. Which has led me to a situation that I will describe in a minute. But how, without you, what's your situation? I mean, you're keeping up, obviously. But
I mean, it's I have never. Well, no, that's a lie. The only time I ever read comics not work related was like the 2 years I got into comics before I started working at Marvel, and so. So I have always had to read them for work. But that said, there are books that I will purposefully wait to read when I have the time to appreciate them and can take my time with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I save those books. And I'm fortunate, you know, that in my spot, you know, at Comic Book Now, like I don't have to be as on top of stuff, like the Wednesday they all come out.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't stop me from all needing to continue to read a bunch of stuff to keep up and see what's mm-hmm. going on and see where, you know, if there's stories and things to come out. But no, I mean, like, look, it's I need to, when I have a stack of stuff that a perfect example is just recently I read, It's Lonely at the Center of the Earth by Zoe Thurgood.
Yes.
And, I really wanted to read it in one go. I did not want to read it in parts. I really wanted to sit down, read it, and get through it. And so I put the book off for quite a bit because I just didn't have the time to do it. And then it got, I got warm out here, and then, I was asked to moderate a panel she was going to be on at Emerald City. And I was like, well, shit, now I really got to read the book. It just so happened that like we had a nice day. I sat outside and I read it and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But not only did I enjoy it, I enjoyed the time and the experience that I got while reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important.
It is difficult, I think, to put this in the context of being a recreational reader at this point for me.
Yeah.
I do know that I have evolved in this sense. There was a while where I enjoyed the ritual. When I did mm-hmm. this job full time, I felt every week that I'd get my comics like it was like such a privilege that I would be reading comics. And I'd be like, I have to do this. This is my job. How lucky am I for that? And I actually was, when I was living in the city, in New York City, I used to go into the city, you know, on Wednesday morning, because mm-hmm. that was my job. I didn't have to hang out. Right. And sometimes I take the subway. Sometimes I ride my bike and I go to Midtown Comics at Grand Central. And then I would find a place to have lunch and I would read comics as I did that. And I loved that ritual of it. Sort of in the middle section after that, when I had to squeeze reading in and I would do it all on a Wednesday night, that got to be a bit of a forced march. And I think that was when I was closest to, like, I had to be in a good mood.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also had to look at them objectively or whatever. And then for some reason over the past chunk of years, I don't know, pandemic or a little before that, the mood doesn't matter, I don't find. It's sometimes if I'm distracted or not, but I've got it down to like a very, like I can be taken away by something and be like, yeah, wow, this is great. Pretty much anywhere. Like I'm pretty good at it at this point.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head in that, like, for me, I just need to not be distracted.
Yes.
I can be in a bad mood and a bad book will put me in a worse mood, but a good book will pull me right out of it.
I would go so far as to say I don't even hate reading bad comics at this point. I mean, like, I don't want to, like, as a whole thing.
Sure.
And sometimes there's bad and sometimes it's just worthless. But bad, I really... As a part of me, I'm proud of the knowledge that I have built for myself and being able to recognize something in a comic that doesn't work and be able to sort of spot those problems or trying to work out why it doesn't. I actually find that, like, I don't know, academically satisfying or something like that. But the one thing that's different now is that of all this, like, I can find something to appreciate in a lot of comic books. I mean, we just gave a fairly dynamic review to Man's Best.
Yep.
But there's still a part of it. I was like, look what this person's doing there. And it's also very, I mean, I think you know enough creators, as do I, like, you want to find something to appreciate because you know on the other side of that is a person.
To make a bad book.
Right. But also there's another side of that is that there's a person who is almost certainly making less money than they would anywhere else who really wants to make comics. Some of them are assholes and aren't any good. You cannot like those books freely. But that's very few and far between. I don't know. I've become a little zen about it. One thing is, and I get lucky, is that I get some books early, and I've learned to, the past few years, I have learned to space out my reading so I don't have to do it all at once. I can read a bunch of them. Like sometimes I'll start before the weekend, and that gives me time to sort of spread them out. That helps me a lot. I don't want to read for 4 hours. It's not fun, but I can still appreciate them. That's a good question though. It's something I think about because I've definitely noticed a change, for me. Awesome questions. You can write to us at contact@ifanboy.com if you'd like to write in for a media splode show. Make sure you put that in the subject line. That is our non-comics podcast that we put out once a month. This last week, there was a media splode. We talked about something about the Oscars, and we did our TV, our TV to watch. I was going to say challenge. That's not exactly it. We all talked about the shows that we have in our backlog that we want to watch, and the other two voted on the shows that you have to, that we have to watch before the next media explodes. So we all have our assignments and we'll come back.
Is Only Murders in the Building on that list?
They all watched that. They had that. They did. I wanted to watch it, so it wasn't on my to watch list.
I just started season 3. I'm loving it.
They do too. Well, my wife loved it. I'm not under the Martin and they're both Martins. I just put that together. Yep. Martin and Martin spell. That's just, it doesn't do it for me. Whatever. I have to watch The Gentlemen on Netflix. I think I would have liked it better if we made somebody watch TV shows that they weren't planning to watch, but then you just go into a defensive and it wouldn't work.
Yeah, it's true.
This past week, Toxplode finally came out. My February show. You do the math. I talked to Rob Williams, a Welsh comic book writer, currently slaughtering it on Petrolhead from Image with art by Pi Par. But the guy's been on Judge Dredd for 20 years. And we talked about Dredd and how I don't really know anything about it. And I thought it was really fascinating.
I loved his ghostwriter.
Yeah. He's also done a lot of sort of bits of Big Two here and there. Ghost Rider, Punisher, Suicide Squad, you know, a lot of stuff.
Not so much.
Really good creator-owned stories that sort of pop up now and then. He was sort of like a Vertigo guy who showed up at the wrong time for a Vertigo, which sucks. I'm really thoughtful about, we talked about story and how to put them together and how he does that as a sort of workaday writer. I mean, you know, and like any sort of British person was like, I don't know if anyone wants to listen to this. I was like, no, you're here at the right place, dude. again, if you're all interested in the craft of making comic books, there'd be a lot worse ways to spend an hour and change. And then Booksplode is coming up. Connor and I will be talking about the French adaptation of Homicide, David Simon's wonderful novel about Baltimore murder police by Philippe Squarzon. I think I'm saying that. Yeah, that sounds about right. I had to look at the cover to get it right. Volume 1 for sure, maybe volume 2, unlikely. That'll be out very soon. I've been dragging my feet on reading that, not because I don't want to, just there's no time. You can find our library of over 1,400 shows and counting at ifanboy.com, wherever podcasts are sold, bought, distributed, downloadable, or otherwise attainable. I'd say you can follow us at ifanboycomics on Instagram. You'll find out what the pick of the week is there before the show comes out. Sometimes it's the best of the week in panels. I don't believe this past week there will be, but Connor surprises us sometimes. You can follow us individually. Connor, the regular co-host of the show, C.S. Kilpatrick, and I'm a Jay Flanagan. You are, what are you, Jim Viscardi?
Yep, Jim Viscardi.
There you go. Over on the Instagram, youtube.com/ifanboy, where you'll find all of our old video shows, posts. We post this show every week there. You can't go there to see the hangouts, but they do live on YouTube. I can't tell you where. You have to be a patron for that. You can consider writing a review or leaving a star rating or liking or subscribing or any of those things if you haven't. We appreciate that for everybody. And there we are. It goes so fast, doesn't it?
It really does.
Ah, it's a good time. It's good to talk to you.
Oh, I love this.
What a delight. What a delight. Is there anything that you have to tell the world about?
No, I mean, look, go to comicbook.com. Lots of great stuff there.
Well, there you
all
go.
All the time.
It's not just comic books, is it?
No.
No. There's wrestling. I know that.
Mm-hmm. I think we put a story up last night that I don't know if you're a fan of Subway and their sauces, you can buy them at your grocery store now.
I'm not.
But just if you were.
Yeah, no, that's
you could. You know,
there's definitely I would love to hear the numbers on that one. All right.
Well, enough that they keep happening.
That makes me Josh.
I'm Jim.